Hello and welcome to Head Start English. Today we're going to talk about winter, which feels a bit weird because it's May and it's not winter. But we're going to talk about the poem Winter by Edwin Morgan, which is a favourite of many National 5 pupils all across Scotland because it's such a fun and optimistic and enjoyable poem to read. I'm being slightly sarcastic when I say that. So yeah, so I'm going to do what I normally do with the poems. Just going to go through the whole thing and I'll stop and chat about any quotes that I think are maybe worth analysing. This is basically like an audio version of annotated notes is what I'm going to try and do here. So it means that instead of having to look at your notes all the time, you can pop your notes into your ears and listen to them while you're walking your dog or kicking about in your house or lying in bed doing nothing. Okay, so let's start. Let's just get straight to it. So it starts with the line, the year goes, the woods decay, and after many a summer dies. So from the very opening lines, death and deterioration are very prominent. You've got those two words, decay and dies. Both those words suggest the idea of things aging and eventually passing away. It just suggests the idea that all things in life, whether it's in nature or humanity, become less vibrant over time, which is a kind of theme that kind of runs through this whole poem. I'm warning you now, this is quite a depressing poem. So everything we talk about is mostly going to be about death. So don't blame me, blame Edwin Morgan for writing this in the first place. So then we move on to the swan on Bingham's pond, a ghost comes and goes. So you've then got this weird metaphor where you've got a swan being compared to a ghost. Now, swans are normally associated with being beautiful and magical animals. But instead, you've got this pessimistic piece of imagery where he's got the swan as a ghost, a shade, almost as if it's haunting the pond. Right? So again, it just further establishes the melancholy tone of the poem. Yeah. So you've got the ghost comes and goes, it goes, and ice appears. So you've got the repetition of the word goes there. You've got the end of the third line which says and goes, and then the start of the fourth line, it goes. So the repetition of goes emphasizes the kind of transient nature of life. All things must pass, all things must come to an end. So it goes. And ice appears. So the swan leaves, obviously not instantly. Ice doesn't just appear magically, but it's over time. The swans disappear from the pond and ice appears. So we're in winter time already, right? So it goes and ice appears. It holds bears' gulls that stand around surprised. Bears' gulls is nothing to do with like that guy that does survival shows. That's Bear Grylls. It's nothing to do with like the animal. Like a bear. It just, when it says the ice bears gulls, it means it can take the weight of gulls, like seagulls, like birds can stand on the ice. So it says it bears gulls that stand around surprised. The word surprised is interesting because it suggests that winter, even though it happens every single year, it is always treated like a surprise, like some kind of unexpected visitor. You know, I mean, you know this, like when your parents probably do this every winter. Like every winter, parents, all adults in Scotland do this. They comment on how dark the nights are getting, as if it doesn't happen every single year. And then when we get to this time of year, when the nights start to get longer, folk act as if that's never happened. So yes, the idea that like it's a surprise. So it bears gulls that stand around surprised, blinking in the heavy light. Now that's an unusual bit of word choice there. Heavy light. You don't normally connect light with weight. Calling it heavy light. So it kind of creates the idea of what winter sunlight is like. You know, I'm sure you've all been outside, maybe not in the last 2 years because of COVID, but in normal times, you'd be out in the winter. The sunlight in winter is kind of weird. It's not the same as the sun you get in the summer. You know, it illuminates things. It provides light. but it doesn't provide warmth and heat like the summer sun does. So heavy light, it makes it sound almost oppressive, you know? It's the idea is you've got this faint, weak light that it kind of like it continues with the idea of life fading away, that the light even fades away and becomes sort of powerless. It isn't as warm, it isn't effective as the light you would get in the summer. So anyway, blinking in the heavy light, bears boys, so this time this is boys who are on it, it's not like little bear children, like who are boys, like bear cub boys. It bears boys when skates take over swan tracks gone. So the kids, once the lake pond freezes over, the birds can stand on it, and children, boys, bit sexist, I'm sure girls ice skate as well, but boys and girls ice skate on the surface of the pond. Then it says, after many summer dies, the swan white ice glints only crystal beyond white. So you've got that, after many summer dies, that links back to the second line where it says many a summer dies, but you'll notice dies is spelled differently this time. Dies with a Y is to do with like colour, you know, when people dye their hair, that's how you spell die. So this time it's a wee bit more positive, although it's still kind of like has connotations of death when you hear the word dies. But when it says after many summer dies, it suggests that colours, you know, like summer brings colour. But it also, by saying after many summer dies, the swan white ice, it's the idea that the colour that's prevalent in the summer disappears in winter time. Swan white ice, that suggests, again, links to the swan from earlier on. It suggests that it's actually quite beautiful. So that's like one of the few lines that's actually quite positive, even if it is a wee bit negative too. So after many summer dies, the swan white ice glints only crystal beyond white. Again, that glints only crystal beyond white suggests lack of colour. It's just the idea that there's no colour in the winter scene, according to Edwin Morgan anyway. I mean, personally, I've been out in the winter and there is colour. You know, like the sky can be blue in wintertime and grass is green in the wintertime. But you understand what Edwin Morgan is saying, that generally the colour drains from the scenery in the winter. It's not quite as vibrant and colourful. Okay, so then we've got this line where he says, even dearest blue's not there, though poets would find it. So even dearest blue's not there. Dearest blue suggests, like, he's talking about the blue associated with summer, like the blue sky and the blue surface of the water. When he says dearest blue, it suggests a kind of desperate longing for summer and the colour of summer. But he says dearest blue's not there, though poets would find it. So what he's saying there is that even in the darkest, coldest, dingiest of winter days, the memory and promise of summer and all the colours that come with summer can still be recalled if you channel your creative and romantic sides. If you become like a wee poet, you'll still be able to like remember the vibrancy of summer. So if you're ever out during the winter in Scotland, just close your eyes and pretend you're Edwin Morgan and everything will just suddenly become more colourful. I can't guarantee that'll happen, but that's certainly what he's suggesting. Okay, then he says, I find one stark scene. Now, the word stark makes me think of Game of Thrones because that's the surname of one of the main families in Game of Thrones. But stark means kind of like barren and desolate. So when he says a stark scene, he's suggesting that he's now going to focus on a particularly desolate scene, a particularly barren scene ahead. So he says, I find one stark scene cut by evening cries. Cut, possible violent imagery there, cut by evening cries, makes you think of somebody getting cut with a knife. By warring air. So warring air, cut by evening cries by warring air. Warring, also quite violent, suggests that the wind, in the winter wind is unsettled, fierce, violent, pretty negative word choice there, warring air. Then he says, the muffled hiss of blades escape into breath. So muffled hiss, I mean, muffled, like, I don't know, it makes it sound a bit like a, muffled hiss sounds like a snake, like a kind of hidden threat. But I mean, literally when it says the muffled hiss of blades, the blades is talking about ice skates, although you could again connect blades with knives, like when it said cut in the last line. But muffled hiss suggests that winter kind of like deadens the sound. The winter air is heavy and oppressive, like the light, and it kind of like deadens the sounds. So it creates a kind of almost a sort of ominous, eerie sense of silence. Okay, so we've got the muffled hiss of blades escapes into breath, hangs with it a moment, fades off goes the scene, the voices fade. So you've got repetition of fades off, and then the word fade. So the word fade appears three times there. So the repetition of fade emphasises the idea that all things, in this case we're talking about voices and the sound of joy, all things will gradually grow faint in the winter air. Again, like in nature, all things die. Even the sound of joy, the sound of happiness, even that is killed and destroyed by the cold, thick, oppressive winter air. Okay, so we've now got the line of trees, the woods that fall, decay and break. That fall, decay and break is a good quote if you're wanting to maybe try and remember some of the quotes from this poem. That is a good one. Fall, decay and break. It very nicely suggests the natural order of everything, whether it's life or whether it's nature. It's the natural order for all things to gradually weaken and fail. Right, so it kind of in this scene it conveys the idea of the trees losing their strength, dropping to the ground, and then rotting away. So once again, we've got words and imagery associated with death, which very much dominate this poem. It's a poem that is almost entirely filled with language that relates to death. When you're asked questions about this, it tends to be questions about how Morgan creates a bleak tone or a depressing tone, or he conveys a sense of loss or death or decay. That tends to be the majority of questions that you get asked about this. So it's just good to look at all these different quotes and know what they tell us, what they suggest about life in general. Okay, so we've got fall, decay and break. The dark comes down. The shouts run off into it and disappear. So, as the sounds fade, the winter light becomes dim and darkness creeps in. And we've got personification used there to suggest that the dark becomes the end of the spirit of life, of joy, of happiness again, swallowing all sense of lively energy that was there before. So again, you get this idea that winter is just, it's the destroyer of everything. It destroys light, it destroys heat, it destroys colour, it destroys even just the feeling of life, the spirit of life, the energy that's usually there in other times of the year. You've got the shouts, a vibrant aspect of the scene earlier on. They seem to accept the inevitability of an end to all things, and they just run off and disappear. They just scarper, right? So dark comes down, it gets dark, the shouts run off into it and disappear. So like the noise just runs away and doesn't want to have anything to do with it anymore because it knows that it's been defeated by the darkness of winter. Right, we're nearly done. At last, the lamps go to... So once the light goes off, there's no light, it's just completely dark. When fog drives monstrous down the dual carriageway out to the west. So you've got, again, more personification there. The movement of the fog, when it says the fog drives monstrous, the movement becomes something evil, something malevolent, something frightening by comparing it to a monster, which again just reinforces the harsh, brutal nature of winter weather. So yeah, it says fog drives monstrous down the dual carriageway out to the west. Now the word west, having it drive off into the west, is interesting. You might not be able to use this in any analysis you write, but it's an interesting thing to notice. The word west also links, as do many things in this poem, it links to the idea of life coming to a conclusion. If you want to do a just as so too about this, you could say just as dawn and the new day is announced with the sun rising in the east, so too the end of the day is marked by the sun subsequently disappearing into the west. So you've got this, the linear journey of the fog could then be seen to represent the relentless march of time towards death, that the sun rises in the east and then it just marches inevitably to where it will die in the west. Again, even the sunlight dies every single day. I know that's a depressing way to think about it, but that is what happens. The sun wakes up in the morning and then at night it just dies. I mean, that's just Morgan being depressing. I like to think of it as just it wakes up in the morning and then it goes back to sleep behind the hills. But Morgan's a wee bit more depressing in that the summer just, like, the sun just dies every single day. Very, very bleak. So then we come to the very last bit where he says, and even in my room and on this paper. So we move from the winter scene of the pond to the kind of comparative warmth and security of the speaker's house as he continues to meditate on death. However, he's unsuccessful when he's trying to think about death and what it means. He says, I do not know about that grey dead pane of ice that sees nothing and that nothing sees. So when he says, I do not know, he's saying that, like, yeah, I might be the absolute best poet in the world. I am skilled at presenting life in poetic terms. I can use metaphors and similes and personification with the best of them. However, death is something that no poet can describe. No matter how eloquent they might be, no matter how good they are with fancy words, all words to do with death are just speculation, because you cannot know what death is like, because you cannot speak to someone once they have died. So he then moves on to this kind of very melancholy piece of imagery at the end where he talks about the grey dead pane of ice that sees nothing and that nothing sees. So you've got the ice, which links back to the frozen layer of pond that he's talked about throughout the earlier stages of the poem. But in this case, he's making the thin layer of ice into a kind of metaphor that represents the thin barrier that exists between life and death. So he's suggesting there the very fragile nature of life. The idea that it could crack any time, that it's just all it takes is a slight crack and life is over, which is true. It's true for all of us. And then that last line where he says nothing, sees nothing and that nothing sees, the repetition of the word nothing emphasises the fundamental cold reality of death as he wants to portray it. And that is that everything ends and there is nothing left to see. Death is final, it is dark, it is just nothing. So these are not my views, these are the views of Edwin Morgan, okay? He is clearly quite pessimistic about life and the prospects of the afterlife. He's basically saying, once you're dead, you see nothing and nothing sees you. You're just gone. So that's quite a bleak way to end the poem, isn't it? Okay, so that's our winter analysed in 20 minutes. Pretty efficient. So if you get this poem in a exam or a prelim or a practice exam, it's quite easy to compare this. If you know, for the 8-mark question, to compare this to other poems, you might get asked about how Morgan creates depressing or disturbing scenes. That's quite easy. You could talk about Glasgow Sonnet. That's quite disturbing. It's quite depressing. You could talk about Glasgow 5th of March. That's also quite a disturbing scene. The absolute horrific violence that occurs to the innocent couple. You could talk about In the Snack Bar and how it's quite disturbing and hopeless and depressing to see how the disabled man who depends on other people is ignored by so many. But you're unlikely to get asked to talk about a poem specifically. You know, you're not going to get an 8-mark question that says choose one other poem that also describes a frozen pond and death. You're not going to get anything that specific. It's probably going to be more likely to be, you know, how Morgan uses setting or how he creates a negative atmosphere or a feeling of, like, hopelessness. It's more likely to be something like that when you do this as a test or an exam. Okay. So hopefully that's helped you. If anyone feels like they need to reach out and they need extra help, I have a Facebook page. It's also called Head Start English. It's quite easy to find. You can see the wee logo that I've got for my podcast. If you go on Facebook and you look up Head Start English, you'll see that little logo that my wife designed. Just going to give her credit for that. And you can send me a message on that if you want me to help you with anything. I've had a few people contact me looking for like tutoring through this. All those things are available. If you just go to Facebook and you can like my page, you can send me a message, you can write a comment on my page. And I'm always about. Okay, so hopefully that's helped you. And hopefully you're not too depressed after listening to that. And I'll see you all next time. Bye, everyone. Bye.